You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. As President Trump and Chinese leaders swap threats of trade tariffs, we hear a lot of talk about what a 25% Chinese tariff could mean to soybean farmers in this country, certainly here in Michigan, which is one of the top soybean-producing states. But how did a legume native to East Asia wind up being such a big part of American agriculture? The answer, Henry Ford.
With one foot on the land and one in industry, America is safe, says Henry Ford. At his exposition, an industrialized barn shows how soybeans grown on the farm may be processed for industrial purposes. An extensive display of early traction engines stands in front of the Ford barn. The barn contains machinery which converts soybeans into the parts used in Ford cars. Mr. Ford has long predicted a closer and mutually profitable union between farm and industry.
Here to tell this story is Ted Genoese. His book is This Blessed Earth, A Year in the Life of an American Family Farm. He's editor-at-large at the Pacific Standard, a contributing editor at the New Republic, and a contributing writer at Mother Jones. And Ted Genoese, it's a pleasure to welcome you to Stateside.
Thanks so much for having me.
So your book tracks the rise of the soybean in this country and fixes the spotlight on Henry Ford. What got this auto pioneer thinking of soybeans in the first place?
Well, it started with a period not unlike the one that we're passing through now. There was a glut of grain that was endangering the family farm because there simply wasn't enough demand. As one of the sort of important people in pushing this movement, Wheeler McMillon said, you know, there's only so much that the human stomach can consume. And so his big push, and it really caught the ear of Henry Ford, was toward trying to find industrial uses for agricultural products, and in particular, looking at ways of extracting industrial products that would replace petroleum-based products at a time when Ford in particular was already starting to worry about petroleum reserves.
And it's worth noting, it's easy to forget in 2018, but I remember it because I used to drive by and live by the Ford tractor operations. There was a real reason Ford was interested in keeping farmers viable because they were the ones buying Ford tractors and trucks.
Absolutely. Ford was famous for saying, if we want the farmer to be our customer, we must find a way to be his customer. And so the whole idea was if we want to keep farmers afloat and buying tractors and farm trucks, we've got to find a way to consume and use the products that are being grown on the farm. And so that encouraged him to set up an agricultural lab at the headquarters in Dearborn to start testing all sorts of different products, looking for ways of taking the contents of these plants that he was testing and seeing if they could be converted to plastics and if the sugars could be converted to ethanol as a replacement for petroleum.
And what was it about the soybean that kind of yielded an aha moment?
Well, the great thing about soybeans is that they do two things. There's a high level of usable oils, much higher than what they had expected even when they started testing. But then also the byproduct, the soy meal that comes out after the extraction of the oils, is still very high in proteins. And what that means is that the oils were available to be used for industrial lubricants and other sorts of products that use the oil. But then those that rely on protein, including plastics, that meal could be converted in that way. And so when you think about an automobile that has all sorts of plastic parts on it and obviously has parts that are needing industrial lubricants, it was really a perfect agricultural product.
And Mr. Ford embraced the soybean with great enthusiasm, as you point out, that he eventually became the largest single soybean grower in the entire country.
That's exactly right. Yeah, I mean, something that we don't necessarily think of these days. When we think of Ford, we don't associate that with soybean growing, but it's true. And most importantly, Ford was the one who not only planted thousands of acres, but hundreds of varieties to see which would fare best and which would yield the best. And so all of that early stock of soybeans, you know, there's been obviously lots of hybridizing and genetic modification since then. But that initial American stock of soybeans really come off of Henry Ford's farms in Michigan.
tell us what he did to encourage Michigan farmers to grow soybeans.
The really important things that he did, first, he made all of his Fords and tractors available for free to Michigan farmers so that they didn't have to buy tractors. This is in the midst of the Depression, at a time when it's difficult for farmers to afford the overhead of buying equipment themselves. So having a tractor that they could use themselves for free was really vital. But he also offered gas and diesel essentially at cost, and at about a quarter of what it would have cost commercially. So for farmers who were concerned or were suspicious of trying to move to a different crop, this really took all of the risk out of it and allowed them to plant those acres. And then most importantly, Ford said, whatever you grow, I'll buy the whole yield. So you don't have to worry about trying to find a market for it. I will not only reduce your overhead, I will guarantee you a sale.
Boy, it's not hard to see why a lot of Michigan farmers decided soybeans looked a lot more attractive than corn.
Absolutely, yes. And all sorts of other crops, too, that at the time were much more common. And this really allowed the soybean to surge at a time when it was really necessary to have a profitable yield just to stay afloat.
If you've just joined us, I'm talking with writer Ted Genoese as we track the role of Henry Ford in making America such a big soybean producer. And Ted, you write that once Saudi Arabia's petrochemical resources were uncovered in 1938, industrial uses for soy were no longer worth exploring because of low oil prices. But by then, farmers had discovered a steady diet of soybeans could fatten up their animals. So what happened to the soybean industry then?
Well, that's really when what we think of as sort of the traditional agricultural powers moved in. Archer Daniels Midland and Cargill both saw this opportunity because there was no longer the demand created by the auto industry. It brought the prices of soybeans down, and that meant that it was more affordable for them as a feed source. And so they moved in, started building processing plants and elevators. And they also encouraged the Farm Bureau to get involved in helping to train farmers in ways of achieving higher yields. And it really, at that point in the late 30s, moved from being something that was an industrial product to being something that was a feed source for livestock, and in particular at that point for cattle.
And we think about, as a matter of survival, farmers are very knowledgeable on global trade and foreign policy, just as much as they are about the daily weather. But, you know, what about at an emotional level? I mean, you spent a year with a soybean farming family in Nebraska. So how do these farmers feel about their place in the global economy and their dependency on U.S. foreign relations?
I think right at the moment, they feel in a very precarious spot. I mean, there have been a number of hard years in a row where many family farms are just barely breaking even and holding on by taking out loans. And so the prospect of having a trade war that greatly reduces demand for soybeans from China, also the rumblings about NAFTA and what that might do in terms of demand for corn from Mexico, for many of these farmers that are growing on corn-soybean rotations, it means that there's the sort of looming threat of losing as much as a third of their income. And I don't think we have to do too much imagining to picture what sort of stress that would put on any family. You know, if we suddenly lost a third of what we had expected to be coming in, it puts everything at risk. But I think it's especially potent for these families and emotional for them because it's not just a home, it's not just a job. It's very often a piece of ground and a livelihood that they've been connected to for many generations. And so they don't feel that they're just failing in their own endeavors, but really letting down the generations that came before.
Boy, that just hurts to hear you describe that situation. We've had so many farmers in the last few days just saying this all could not have come at a worse time for us.
It really couldn't. And this is exactly the moment that farmers are having to decide what they're going to plant and how much they're going to plant. And to have this incredible uncertainty at a time when they're struggling already, it's put a great deal of stress on farmers. And I can say here in Nebraska, talking to people at the farmers union here, They said, you know, that the calls to the suicide hotline are heavier than they've been in many, many years, that farms are being lost here in the state at a rate faster than they have been in many years. So it's a really stressful time already, and to have this level of uncertainty introduced into it is just the worst of all possible worlds.
Henry Ford always warned against the federal government intervening, attempting to control commodities like soybeans, dare we say weaponizing food. Is what we're seeing right now between the U.S. and China and other nations, is this the realization of what he was talking about?
In many ways it is, because, you know, his notion was that even when the government is meaning to step in and support the farms, it was often causing sort of secondary problems that couldn't be foreseen. For Ford, what he was concerned about was the kind of price controls that were being instituted, especially as the United States got into World War II. But now we're seeing a situation where farmers have been encouraged to grow certain crops and in certain ways because of tax incentives and because of insurance incentives. Very often, insurance is given out according to what the highest use of the land would be. The taxes are assessed according to what the highest use would be. And what that means is the highest paying and highest yielding crops. But of course, those crops very often that are most cost effective and profitable are supported by the government. So it's creating an artificial situation. And occasionally when we have these sorts of moments where the government goes from supporting an industry to trying to use that industry, as you said, as a tool or even a weapon of foreign policy, it causes great, great problems for the industry itself. We've all heard Donald Trump say that the farmers are great patriots and willing to make these sacrifices. And I think that generally that's true, but I hope that the president also recognizes, while this may be sort of a momentary trade war and a kind of momentary correction in trade policy that the White House is trying to effect, it's often 100 or 150 years of history for these families. It's really not enough to say we'll make it up to them later, because if a family loses a farm that has been with their family for 150 years, there just isn't any way to make that up to them later.
Ted Genoways is author of the book, This Blessed Earth, A Year in the Life of an American Family Farm. Ted, thank you so much for spending time with us on Stateside.
Thank you.